Ivan, they took it well. All right, let's get started then.
I didn't catch that.
Okay.
Say again.
Somebody's, we're getting feedback from somebody's computer. Good evening, it's Wednesday evening, as David would say, roughly 7 o'clock, and so we are continuing with our discussion of the works of E.J. Gold, currently Volume 5, Work of Groups. And Marvette, I'm having short-term memory erasure. What number show is this?
Week number 27.
This is week number 27.
Seven.
On Work of Groups. And we have participants on the phone. And do we have participants online, Dan?
Yes.
Okay. How many?
Five.
Okay, well, that's not bad.
It's early.
It's early.
So I want to prompt the phone folks because, you know, we don't have as many voices here today as sometimes. So we'll be calling on your voices to be heard.
You're inviting Wiseacre?
Please.
Hey, if you want me to mislead you, please call on me.
Thank you.
We can Wiseacre everyone to a complete state of slumber.
Actually, we are expecting you to speak at length without Wiseacring.
Oh, my God. Check your assumptions.
Okay. All right. So I tell you what, we're going to start out with our minutes of the previous meeting. Pat is going to read the scribe's notes on our session regarding the law of hospitality.
Wednesday, September 13, 2017, Work of Groups, number 26, on hospitality. 1. Observations related to groups and hospitality. 1. In the ancient world, throughout many cultures, hospitality was a strong tradition, and stories like Odysseus being shipwrecked on the land of the Phaeacians is an example of this. 2. In some cultures, like in Colombia, extending hospitality is an action taken representing a group like one's country or one's family. One is not acting as an individual. 3. The statement was made that we are ambassadors of this material we are studying and have studied. The question was asked of the group, are we expressing hospitality when we go out into the world and see our grocers, mechanics, dry cleaners, and others that we encounter? 4. This school's group exercise or task involving holding vigil for Blair, a terminal patient, throughout the 24-hour day was mentioned. One person, Adelheide, was mentioned as having impeccable behavior. She was extremely aware of Blair and not intrusive and did not invade the space with her stuff. She was almost invisible in the space. When it was her shift, something happened in the room, which was the pinnacle of hospitality. 5. A rephrasing of the question to the group. Interpret one's life and ask, where is the God that will come to you tomorrow for which you have the opportunity to provide hospitality? 6. Ivan recalled a group holding an invitational dinner where they had intentionally set an extra place at the table. There was a knock on the door. They invited in the unknown guest. He listened and participated and ate the dinner. It was very magical. Wow. I just want to comment from not having been here last week that reading these notes, it's so interesting the flavor that is coming across with these notes.
Oh, well, it was a good, I would say, my personal outlook is that was a very good conversation about hospitality.
May I ask a question?
Please.
Is it appropriate or possible for the participants here in this class to get a copy of that upon our completion of the class?
Wonderful suggestion.
You mean today's notes or all the...
The book.
This little book, this little jewel that you guys read from to initiate each class is a really wonderful summary of everything that we did before, and it adds more than what we have without it.
Yes.
Yeah, the scribe, the scribe function that Marvette is fulfilling is giving us an artifact here.
I think it's outstanding work, and I would like to have it if that's possible.
I would too.
Marvette's response was that we need to ask David, and if we can remember to ask David, or someone reminds us to ask David, I think that's a perfectly wonderful thing, and it would make a terrific Christmas gift to all of us. But we won't be done.
It's just another. You know, it'll be
maybe
another,
next year Christmas.
Yes.
Yeah. There's another post. You know, there's another post involved, which is the transcribing to digitalize that. It'll need to be typed in, so we'll just have another. Oh, excellent. All right.
Yes.
So we already have a taker for that post. We have a designated.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Thank you, Carrie.
That
sounds really wonderful.
Yeah. Actually, any other comments? We typically should do this. Any other comments about last week's discussion? I actually just wanted to say I'm really glad to review it, you know, to hear that myself.
Yes.
And as I recall, I would like to add that I think that part of what we were saying about Adelheid was in the context of that the laws of hospitality are incumbent on not just on the host but on the guest.
Yes.
So in other words, when Odysseus was washed up on the shores of the Phaeacians, he needed to behave in a certain way according to the protocol. And we were saying that Adelheid was something like the perfect, impeccable guest.
Yes.
It's like she was so present and able to follow the requirements, to take up the requirements of the space. And this is what, you know, for our community and let's say in groups like this, that's what we're looking for is I think actually as he's repeating in these talks here and there, you know, we're looking for the person who understands that the guest has obligations, whether it be 3 days or whatever, you know, that there's a reciprocal obligations or standards of behavior anyway.
Well, Ivan, it's similar to what you said about artists and the work of art is not complete until somebody appreciates it.
Yeah, I think, did I say that or did David?
Reciprocal.
Maybe. Yeah, one of us said it. Yeah, there's a circle that needs to be completed. Actually, that's a terrific segue into some of the material tonight. But Dan, do we have any more comments online? You know, anybody else commenting on hospitality? This is a good thing to do to close the review of the topic from last week. No?
Not yet.
Okay.
I was just reminded of the story. Well, I don't actually know how it is in the original story, but in the movie, when Jason and his Argonauts go to this faraway land to obtain the Golden Fleece, at first they are treated as guests by the king, and but one of their crew betrays them and tells the king what they're there for, and that's basically a violation of their role in hospitality, and so they're immediately captured.
Yes, a violation of the code. Actually, this particular item, the law of hospitality, figures very
Prominently,
yeah, very, very influentially in a lot of these plots, you know, mythological plots, ancient epic plots and so on, because it's what's going on, you know, with Odysseus, there are all these things over there. A lot of the problem that Odysseus had that took him 10 years to get home was that he and his men landed on some island, and then the men promptly went and killed some cattle that were that belonged to some demigod or something. I can't remember the exact details, but that was he, basically they were persecuted after that because that was a violation of hospitality. You know, it was verboten. It was not that was not permitted.
Well, just to step, like I say, I wasn't sitting here with you all last week, but to step into what's been said and read so far, I would take it that it's a requirement, just like when you do self-observation, self-study of any type, it's a requirement that you familiarize yourself with whatever are the laws. And, you know, E.J. does touch on that in the book on the Great Laws.
The Great Laws, yeah.
And it's part of the assumption in our culture mostly these days that if there's not a law that you don't know about, then you're not responsible for obeying it.
is that right? I never heard that one.
Misunderstanding understood in the mainstream culture. Hey, man, I didn't know that.
I thought that the legal formulation is that ignorance of the law is no excuse.
Well, that's
you're under arrest.
That's a legal explanation.
Oh,
I'm talking about us, and they ain't got that.
Okay.
Right. So what my point being that the study of a function or the study of the elements of a group also imply that you would study the laws that pertain to the operations of the group, whatever they might be. You would need to know the law of the land. You would need to know, you know, where you're going, how should you behave, etc., like that.
Good, yeah. Well, I think that David has that actually very much in mind, and that's why this journal is going to be very valuable for us because there's quite a bit in there regarding the guidelines and laws of the
elements
operation.
And functions.
Elements of a group. Okay, so in the interest of continuing, I realize that there's some very short chapters here, and I know that David often skips over the very short chapters and goes for the really intense ones. And there's one, chapter 54 coming up, which is called Notes on Some Exercises.
Yes.
It goes on for pages and pages.
Yes.
And there's some utterly fascinating data in there.
Yeah.
But I would like to say, I think that we can spend this class tonight on these three short chapters before that and let David participate, you know, in this long, this kind of treasure trove of different exercises that E.J. was giving out to this particular group. And, it's just really a lot of information in there. But the way I would like to do this is just read one at a time these short chapters. But I'd like to hear, after we read each one, I'd like to hear from anybody who's listening, anybody online. We actually don't have, well, we have, there are four of us here tonight, including Marvette and Dan on the computer. You know, we don't have other group members here. But for any of us or anyone who's listening, I'd like to ask you what your response is, you know, or if you have any ideas or associations or any comments about that particular chapter. In other words, so we'll sort of breeze through these chapters, but I think there's some interesting points in all of these short ones as well. So do you want to read this chapter?
Why don't 51? You start?
Why
yeah.
I start?
Yeah,
okay,
51, right?
Yeah, 51 is runs. Oh yeah, 51 is just this one, three paragraphs.
Yeah, page 125.
Chapter 51, Notes from a Breakfast Talk. Knowledge is substance, which can be transferred partially from one organism to another during transmission, in quotes. If one holds knowledge rather than passing it on to another, it will gradually disintegrate or deteriorate. Unactualized knowledge will rot over time. Knowledge is unactualized understanding.
Whoa.
Want to stop right there?
Whoa.
That's quite a paragraph, yeah.
Unactualized understanding.
Mm-hmm. Ooh. So there's two phrases. It says, so we're stopping on the first paragraph, folks. Unactualized knowledge, you know, is in the next to the last sentence in this paragraph. This is not good. So, in other words, unactualized knowledge is going to decay. It's going to rot. It's saying knowledge itself, this is whether it's actualized or unactualized, but knowledge is unactualized understanding. So,
I have wonderful examples of that, but they're too internal for me to actualize them.
I think we have a comment. We have a comment coming.
Is it
just need the green button.
Oh.
Okay. What I hear in there is a very, very prominent point is that you can be proactive in terms of utilizing knowledge given to you in transmission by being able to pass it on, and that in that all the other stuff is not as, it doesn't seem, it seems not as prominent as the passing on of the transmission puts you up to the next level. So you don't, you are actualizing it. That was my understanding.
Right. In other words, you're if one holds knowledge rather than passing it on to another, it will gradually disintegrate or deteriorate. So the idea is to pass it on to another, and that's actualizing it, right? That's what he's saying here.
Well, it's actually in the next paragraph.
Yeah, let's keep going.
Is it okay to go there?
Sure, let's keep going.
Well, when knowledge is transmitted to another, the energy of transmission causes knowledge to become absorbed and transformed into understanding. It is then one of the axioms with which an individual can operate from then on. So that's why I got hung up on the end of the first paragraph, because if knowledge is unactualized understanding, then understanding is knowledge which has been actualized. And the actualizing is transmission, passing on. But the other part of that was what I heard in it, and I'm just applying it to my own personal situation.
Mm-hmm.
I have maybe close to 16 years now working with the choir group on Monday nights that's led by Valberga, and she uses the training that she got from this guy from Finland who got it from Valberg Svedström, who was a Swedish soprano who worked with Rudolf Steiner. And the technique is called uncovering the voice. And, you know, I had like 40 plus years in singing and music before that. And so I was speaking with Vali and Matthias last night and remarking that people had been so kind to me not to drive home the point for 13 years that I wasn't getting it. I wasn't hearing it. They did not do that to me. They did not say, you know, that's not what we're doing. That's not what we're saying. That's not what we want you to do. That's not it. they just kept very gently saying, and this would be good if you would, like that. Mm-hmm. And it took so long for me to get, not that I can do it, but for me to get the distinction between what I thought I heard with all the previous historical stuff laid in there. Hey, you know, I've been trained for opera. I know these things. You don't have to tell me, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And I realized when I was sitting there talking to them that it was, it had finally gotten internalized to the point that I could hear and understand the difference in what was being said. And I had that happen to me with language. So I know some of what this phrase means, but when we use a word like knowledge and understanding, mm-hmm. this is not a mental capacity thing. This is not data absorption. Right. So this little comment, knowledge is a substance. Right. You know, what is it that can absorb substance? It's not the human form. So to me, this is a comment on the challenge of work of, I'm going to use a simile here, an energetic nature, mm-hmm. of a spiritual or an ambiance nature, as opposed to study. Study is not how you acquire knowledge. So anyway, boy, that took me somewhere. Sorry.
Yeah, well, that's
deviated. Anyway,
that's in line with my understanding.
Yeah.
Here's the third paragraph.
Oh.
When knowledge is received, a heat of reception is released.
Hmm.
This heat flash serves as an indication that a complete transmission has occurred. The energy of transmission makes possible the transformation of knowledge led into alchemical gold. Lead is in quotes there, and alchemical gold is in quotes. That's a comment. So now it's the transformation of knowledge. You know, he's talked about actualizing knowledge. And then the transformation of knowledge, this is lead, called lead into alchemical gold. So I would like to know, for anybody listening here, if you've heard this, if you're hearing this for the first time, or if you read this at home, you know, if you've already read this, I wonder if this rings a bell. I mean, if you know, what is your response to this, or what do you think about this formulation? You know, what does it bring up for you?
And this would be the time, gentlemen on the phone.
Well, I'm surprised I haven't said anything yet. Pianjo has made a comment in the chat. Unactualized knowledge is information generated by the formatory apparatus. It has no component of being to give it any permanency. Being comes from presence and is the emerging third force. And Silverdale says, well said, I agree, that is the point of this chapter. And that, the presence, is what can be transmitted with verifiable feedback.
Well,
mm-hmm.
yeah, that's very helpful.
Okay. Does anyone have a specific example, an example or an experience?
You mean a transmission?
To bring to light, let's say, any part of this process that EJ is describing here.
You know, I'd be happy to throw two pennies in the pot.
Okay.
First of all, of course, my disclaimer that much of what EJ discusses, to my way, in my opinion, is arises out of Gurdjieff's fundamental ideas. So this paragraph, to me, would say it echoes or reiterates that we can all acquire data and information. You know, we can read books and acquire a lot of information. Gurdjieff defines understanding as data intentionally acquired, combined with personal experiences, personally experienced. So if you blend these two diametrically opposite things, data, information, knowledge, together with personal experiencing, then you have something called understanding. That is the reduction of theory to practice, and that can be personally verified. The way that EJ describes this exact same idea in HBM is we start off with an awareness that we have a material, organic body, which can be used as a transformational apparatus if we can awaken, arouse, resurrect a finer electrical field that we attach the name essence or essential self to. And so that as that essential self rises to the surface and begins to displace the organic machine, that is the actualization of understanding, because we're now balancing two diametrically opposite parts of ourselves. Well, that whole process of that whole ability on our part to bring the center of our gravity to our essential self and make it the center of our general activity is what invocation is all about. So once we learn to invoke for ourselves, then what we're doing is we're, of course, actualizing our knowledge. And once we're able to invoke ourselves, we're actually able to invoke or share communion with the presence of others, sometimes with their knowledge, sometimes without their knowledge. But in all cases, we are turning lead. This is, of course, you know, out of the alchemical literature of the 16th, 17th century, that we're able to convert the lead of knowledge, which is not personally experienced and therefore not actualized, into the alchemical goal of knowledge, which has now been personally experienced and transformed into personal presence of and being. And that being, as Piaggio says in his comment, can then be emanated out toward those that enter our immediate sphere of influence. That's kind of what happens with EJ, in my opinion. So anyway, those are my comments.
That was nice.
Thank you.
That was nice. That was what I was hoping for, is people would go, yes. And if you're around EJ at certain times, it's sort of like you're in a field, you know, noticeable, not defined in any specific manner for this particular explanation, but within that field, there's the potential for you just by being there in it, in proximity, to receive transmission. That's another way of looking at this. But it's very clear here. It's very clear here. It says when knowledge is received, and just because you're in a field doesn't mean that you have made yourself a receptacle to have transmission received. So there is a distinction there, and I think you said it very clearly. What's his name? Silverdale. That there is a requirement on the part of the recipient to have activated what can be the receiving part. Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's true. Hey, Dan, you want to read anything that's over there? Or speak yourself? Or both?
We have a comment from Videra. I was in a situation that was dangerous and heard other voices in my head repeating work ideas that were needed, but I had not memorized to the point where they were spoken. These ideas helped me survive, and I started seeing 10 realms.
Thank you.
Okay, there's an example. That's interesting. So there's a transmission somehow coming to life, let's say. It's the energy of transmission.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which, well, it may not, you know, this may, there may be a delay, you know, it may take some time for this knowledge to be activated.
If I might, I would like to add a comment.
I was going to suggest that you have something to say about the energy of transmission.
Go ahead.
Is that it's interesting to note, particularly with Silverdale's comments in mind, that giving or being present can be done consciously, and you can receive it consciously or even unconsciously. That is, a gift can be given to people unawares, so that when we work on ourselves, we are actually, in fact, working with everyone, because we're all actually one creature anyway.
Were you finished? Because you're coming in and out.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just saying that when we activate presence, we give something to people, either intentionally or unintentionally. And when we're around EJ or other people who have developed this being, we're actually activating and growing our own essence. So any work we do on ourselves is ipso facto work for everyone. We're actually helping everyone just by these acts. It creates a bonding and a real amalgamation of all the points of light that were spread out at the creation, and we're bringing them back together.
Yes.
Nice.
That's the part that I didn't hear before. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a great formulation. Actually, something about what Videra described reminds me of the situation in a study circle. You know, I had the experience in Tucson of being, I responded to an ad, and I went to a study circle that another, a man from who had been at the institute started in Tucson, and then eventually what evolved, that study circle lasted for a certain amount of time, and then it sort of melted down or fell apart. And since I felt the need to continue the study circle, then I took it on myself to advertise and try to attract people and start up again. And it was my experience at a number of points during this, let's say, my hosting experience, becoming the idiot responsible, of which I never felt very confident, that I was competent to do, but I had the information, actually, which came from the Institute, that it wasn't necessary to be loaded up with data, that it had more to do with the hospitality, that it was a matter of creating a space and then having an experiment, an ongoing experiment, so what can happen if we have a study circle. And I was wondering if I thought Harry might have instances like this too, but I know that I experienced as a study circle leader that there were things that I didn't know I knew, or things that I had forgotten I knew, or things that I may or may not have read in books or that may have come from between the lines or some other form of transmission that wasn't exactly verbal, that, you know, I would have resources available to me at, in the study circle meetings, like this meeting here, like we meet from 7 to 8 once
mm-hmm.
a week. In the study circle meetings, there would be, I would feel exactly this, I don't recall if I ever felt it as heat. I certainly felt space changes. I sometimes felt that the light changed and that there seemed to be a dimensional shift or a space change, you know, during a study circle meeting. And there was a transmit. For me, it was something was coming alive because people were looking at me and saying, what is it that's, what does this idea mean? Or what are these statements in EJ's writings mean? Or what is this deal about self-remembering or self-observation or something? And I would be, you know, it's where you're, what's the phrase about putting yourself in a position of obligation,
mm-hmm.
and putting yourself in a position where your awakening is a necessity to the work. When you make yourself the source, or you make yourself even a small source, a study circle leader, then you have the necessity to transmit. And the stuff I experienced,
and it goes through you.
Yeah, it wasn't, you know, I can't say that it was, that I was consistent, that I had an absolute certainty that this effect would come about. But I experienced this, the difference between, you know, the difference between the mundane, let's say, the more mundane, you know, trying to tough something out or figure it out and hopefully, and the more heat, you know, the more energetic or heat releasing transmission, because it, you know, would be a clear, it would be evident in a, with a group of people. Anyway, so that's what I guess my comment here is, that these, the phenomena that EJ is describing here, my closest knowledge of it is in a group, is in the processes of a group. That this is where transmission can take place. One place that I know of that transmission can take place. Anyway, any other comments? I think that we may find a continuation. These are different talks, but where some of these ideas come up again. Let's try chapter 52. Mark, for his own good. Go ahead.
First, we have a comment from Bernie.
Yeah.
In a more lower level, I would say that the difference between opinion and knowledge is that you have verified and experienced an information and turned into a fact. And Vidara says, I felt it came only when necessity made it possible.
Yes.
Necessity.
Yes.
Yes.
Necessity is, besides being the mother of invention, you know, necessity may be the companion of transformation, you know, of transforming knowledge in this way, actualizing. Okay, so let's look at chapter 52. Why don't you, let me see, how long is this one, Pat?
It's short.
Yeah, you want to read this one or else?
Yes, chapter 52.
Page 126.
Too smart for his own good. On study groups. If a group cannot support itself, should not exist. One man who was sent out to start a group did not do anything, just left to live by himself. G talked to him for a while, told him he was too smart. He needed to get out and learn to be naive. G told him he was too concerned about his spiritual survival. G said no help could be given this man, W, that he would have to get himself moving before he could get help. He must do something, not necessarily something he plans to continue. For him to remain here does not help prolong suffering. he told W, he was afraid of oblivion. He went through a questioning process with him about experiences, at the end of which he pointed out that W had already survived many different experiences. Oblivion, impossible. So what really makes us afraid? W said he was afraid of being in some overwhelming situation and being unable to do anything about it. G. So, you not like destiny. Kay has joined us here. Did you want the phone to make a little comment? You're just humming to yourself, yes. That is a good one.
Definitely, that's a punchline.
What makes it a good one? I want somebody to say why they think this is so good. Yeah, get the phone and say it. There you go.
Well, for me, it's when Pat said destiny, and it just hit me kind of like a punch. So I just found that very a strong reading and touched somewhere within my spirit, I guess.
Certainly sounded like a punchline.
Ooh.
I thought it was like the end of a stand-up. Yeah. Well, a joke. Yeah.
Well, W said he was afraid of being in some overwhelming situation and being unable to do anything about it. Like life?
Yeah, like destiny. Yeah, right. Well, I mean, this little chapter, that's interesting because this happens to be very meaningful to me because, you know, as in the example that I just told, a man was sent out from Crestline, actually, from the Institute in Southern California to start a study circle. And, you know, this man was in the same position as I was later. I mean, he felt the same as I did. He wasn't competent to start a study circle, and he didn't really want to start a study circle. And I was one of the first people that showed up when he advertised for this study circle. But and he was mortified. I mean, he actually didn't know what to do with me when I showed up there alone. I mean, if there had been three or four of us together, he might have been more easily able to figure out how to start. But with me, he basically told me to come back in a week, you know, which I did. I was persistent. But I have to thank that man for carrying out that obligation, carrying out an instruction that his teacher gave him, that EJ gave him, because he was my first contact with the Institute. And you know, and the thing is that what he did was he did something, you know, like listening to this little talk here. What is this gentleman? This gentleman is called W.
W.
Yeah, my first study circle leader did something that this person W evidently was unable to do. It's like, in spite of any fears that he might have had, like, oh, people are going to come and ask me questions.
Right.
They're going to say, what is the work?
And what am I going to say?
How do I wake up? Or can I escape sleep? Or do you know about enlightenment? Are you an enlightened person? And things like that. And, you know, or they might be skeptics. They might come and say to me, where are you from? What are your credentials? Who's your teacher? What organization? I never heard of them. How come I never heard of them? And so on. I mean, you know, none of that fazed the man who advertised at that time to start that study circle, and it was a tremendous benefit to me. I mean, you know,
well, the title of the chapter is Too Smart for His Own Good, and I take good to mean something very specific. We just had the little snippet about knowledge is a substance, and, you know, goodness is one thing that feeds being, and good is not smart. you don't get good from smart. So,
yeah.
You know, this little story about how you try and think it through, or, you know, what is it that really is the matter here? What's bothering you? Oh, you mean like the whole thing? It's not gonna be a response that's gonna help. You know, there isn't a response to that. You have to go and do like your guy did for you.
It's like saying, you know, it's like as he asked W, why didn't you start a study circle the way I asked you to? Well, I felt overwhelmed. I didn't know, it was just too overwhelmed. It was too much of a burden for me.
Yeah.
And so, you know, what's the reply to that? Well, and so what else is new? You know.
Yeah.
What else have you experienced in life?
Well, I'm wondering if anybody has had the situation where you've been, you know, basically put on the spot, either directly by EJ or, you know, by one of his requests that, you know, you get something going, and your response is basically, not me, you know, because as a response, that doesn't take you anywhere. So I'm just wondering if anybody's had that experience. Hey, do you remember being the nanny? Kay and I shared a couple of different positions. What is that? We just keep doing tag team back and forth? So the nanny position really, it allowed for an incredible amount of closeness, but not in a way that you could do anything what you were experiencing because you were loaded with responsibility. You know, you had duties. And so, you know, I recall that EJ always made it possible for people to get close to him and participate, at least if not right next to him from afar. And he's still doing that even through the internet. He said, come on, you can do this. You can join me. You can participate in this. Here's the thing you can do. Here's the thing you can do.
Right.
Here's the thing you can do.
Mm-hmm.
All the time is basically the song is, you want work?
Mm-hmm.
Here's work, you know. But he's not going to say, oh, let me make it so that you can tolerate it.
are you kidding? Let me make it so that you can tolerate it, she says.
So, yeah, I just wonder if other folks, hey, Dan, I see there's some response over there.
Panja says, our culture suffers from widespread reductionism. We actually believe we are separate from the absolute, so we fear oblivion, which does not exist. Physicists figured this out 100 years ago. Make that some physicists.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Panja, you nice, very clean. Thank you.
Yeah, again, I mean, I think that Pianjo is capturing the in a way, the essence of this chapter, which is EJ is telling this guy, what is there to be afraid of? You know, what is it? You're afraid that you're going to have some unusual experience. You know, you're going to be raked over the coals. You're going to lose essence. You're going to be laughed at. What is so fearful? You know?
Well, I remember EJ telling me once that there is a, nothing, you know, we are immortal, but in the worst possible way.
Yes.
We are doomed to have to deal with a plenum of activities. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Our experience here is just subtraction from a huge reality that is eternal.
Right, that we cannot seem to tolerate.
We're just a little piece of light separated, and we fail to see where we came from.
Mm-hmm.
We're just a little blind piece of light.
Yeah, okay.
Good. We're looking at our own reflection in the sand.
Yes. Yes. In the dullest reflecting form that we can find. That's what we're looking at. Nice.
Well, yeah. Anything else? Anyone else over there, Dan?
Well, there's a comment from Grant. The advantage of selling is that you are just a shopkeeper with a variety of goods. For me, it takes a lot of pressure off and allows me to move, if even just a little.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's...
Well, there again, you know, another way of looking at this is saying, you know, EJ is asking us to be in the marketplace.
Yep.
You know, he's always used that as a... You could think of it as a metaphor, as symbolic, but I mean, it's been my experience since I first came in contact with the Institute that he actually doesn't mean intellectually or metaphorically or poetically to think about the marketplace. He means get into it.
Yep.
Get out there like Grant is talking about. Have
yep.
things for sale.
Yep.
Meet strangers, you know, basically.
Yep.
Meet strangers, and that's where we have the opportunity to experience this transmission. And the more, in a sense, the more ideas, you know, the more books we've read or the more ideas we've been loaded up with, or the more knowledge we've been surrounded with or subjected to, you know, the more necessity we have, like I think Badira was saying, we have necessity to find some way to transmit,
mm-hmm.
because otherwise it's all going to go to nothing. It's going to
mm-hmm.
become compost or maybe something else. I
mm-hmm.
don't know. But in this talk, EJ used the term rot, you know, he's just saying it's going to decay. Rot, it's going to decay. It's not going to be alive. In other words, it's going to turn into a lower,
yes.
lower food and not
a lesser
and not,
form,
and not all chemical gold. You know, not the higher food. What do you think? Should we try to breeze through
yes.
the duck soup chapter
yes.
as well,
yes.
and then we'll
yes.
let David start with chapter 54.
Duck soup.
Yeah, I just want to say the duck soup. Let's say without reading the whole chapter. You know, this duck soup talk is kind of interesting because it's going on, you know, this old, I think it's a Nasruddin story, isn't it, about the soup of the duck, you know, and then there's the soup of the soup of the duck and the soup of the soup of the soup of the soup of the
mm-hmm.
duck. And, you know, it's a joke. It's Nasruddin, it's an old Turkish or Persian, you know, Sufi story or something,
mm-hmm.
but it's, you know what it's actually about is this idea of the very 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 watered down
yeah.
version of the transmission of the teaching, and there's a really funny bit in here where EJ's just reminds me of the kind of thing where people would, you know, if there was a misunderstanding of this, he says on the top of page 129, he says in the South according to G they make a soup. Squirrel purlieu, they put a live squirrel in the soup and pull it out before it gets too hot, add vegetables and save the squirrel for the next soup.
That's right.
And I think that, you know, if that ever got, so that could easily get mistransmitted to where people tried to experiment with a squirrel or something. But I think they would have not understood that EJ was talking about the thing like stone soup, you know,
yep.
which is like saying, you know, it's a joke, saying that they just want to give the soup the flavor of the squirrel, so that it wasn't really a squirrel soup anymore. But he talks about hot peppers all through this talk.
Yeah.
At the beginning, he says, "What is spice?" So this is all instigated because someone spiced the soup in his kitchen.
Right.
And he said, "You can't." That's like, "I'm going to throw you out. You know, I'm going to buy you a train ticket. You know, don't put random spices or spices that are to your taste." In the soup and so on.
Yep.
You know, in other words, that was not the function of the kitchen, alchemically speaking. But then he says here, what is spice? More entertaining, more dramatic results, imaginary instant holiness, evolution, adding miracles, apocryphal stories.
Yes.
So, you know, in other words, he has a lot of different comments here about what is teaching, you know, what is a transmission and what's not a transmission. And, let me see. I'm looking for what really struck me in here. Then he goes to the legomenism towards the bottom of 129. A hot pepper can be an emotional key to an artifact. So he's saying that there are spices that you do want. So a hot pepper can be an emotional key to an artifact. Legomenism is dependent upon correct repetition, but reading of an artifact does not depend upon correct repetition. So, you know, to me, there's a really marvelous idea in here, which may be related to, for instance, Grant being out there selling things.
Yes.
You know, which is to say that the legomenism is the one where, you know, knowledge is encoded into, for instance, a dance choreography or a, you know, an epic poem or something like that. And the idea is that it's going to be transmitted to far future generations by ensuring the sacredness of this and making sure that it's sacredly passed on from generation to generation to generation. But then EJ uses that example. As soon as somebody translates the Aramaic, it says something like, you know, it's harder to get a rope, you know, something like a rope rather than thread through a needle, then it's easier to do that than for a rich man to get into heaven. It gets misunderstood because of the vocabulary problem going from Aramaic to Greek or whatever, you know, some other language, even Hebrew, I don't know. And it turns out that it's a camel, you know, people think that it says it's easier for a camel to get through the eye of a needle than a rich man to get into heaven. And then you have all kinds of esoteric conspiracy theories and interpretations of why Jesus would have been talking about getting a camel through the eye of a needle. And so what EJ's pointing out with this is, again, it's like the soup of the soup of the soup of the duck. It's like this method is not surefire. You know, this method has flaws. It has difficulties, you know, as a transmission method. Whereas he's talking about, you know, and I hear, all of a sudden I hear, oh, what about Zazzle and Redbubble and all
yes,
these things?
Yes, exactly.
Like what he's saying, he's saying right here, reading of an artifact does not depend upon correct repetition.
In the last paragraph.
Yeah, the last paragraph here, I'll read you this. This simple error, you know, which is the camel in the eye of the needle, led to speculation that a camel might go through Cleopatra's needle, a big stone monument. Possibility for error is inherent in legomenism. Through primary source emanations, with three capital letters, by the way, primary source emanations, an artifact records data which cannot be altered by succeeding generations of scientists and artists of new format. So, you know, again, I'd be interested in, we're almost out of time, but we might have time for comments on that. I mean, my take on that is it's another way of saying exactly what he's saying now, which is to say, if I have an artwork that radiates, you know, that's an artifact, that's a reading artwork, that I can put that artwork on a dress, I can put it on a matchbook, I can put it on a cup, I can put it on a notebook, I can put it on a box of chocolate or whatever, and that's a reading artwork. And so now I'm emanating, you know, this is exactly what he's saying, primary source emanations, you know, and it's very, I think it's an intriguing strategy.
Well,
it's interesting, you know, it's not just a moneymaker, you know what I mean, or it's not just, in other words, I believe that what EJ's talking about is genuinely, he doesn't just mean for Grant to get out there and sell things and be in the marketplace, he means to sell these artifacts.
Yes.
Sell the art that radiates, that reads. Marvette's got a comment.
Well, I also had the understanding that he said that if you go through the process of working like the Zazzle site, that in doing so, that puts you in a position of alchemical transformation, doing the process.
Yes.
Good.
It's a requirement for producing what it is that's going to sell. It's necessary that you have the alchemical context in order for it to hold the alchemical substance. So... put yourself in the river.
Yeah, I want to make a suggestion that maybe I could get a yay or a nay on this for the purpose of Marvette's notes. I think, Marvette, is it possible that he's saying if you're doing all of this on Zazzle or Redbubble or PAOM or whatever it is as part of this effort of the community and of the group, it's an effort that he's engaged in, and people here are engaged in, and our whole community is engaged in, And so now you're engaging in a group effort.
Yes.
And that's going to be, guess what? It's not only transmitting to other people, which is the part of it that I was bringing up, but it's also transformative to you because you're participating
exactly.
in the transmission.
It is a group effort.
Is that what you meant, Marva? Or did I? Did I distort what you said?
No, I think that's
Phone.
Get on the phone, please.
I think what you said is a further expansion of it, because he didn't really say it like that, but he was really encouraging people to do it.
Yes.
And I think in the doing of it, you discover what you're saying.
Yes.
Well,
I also like to use the word in this earlier talk, the talk about the knowledge and understanding. I like that he used the word axiom, that when you activate the knowledge, it becomes part of the axioms on which you behave, not just mental.
Yeah.
So an axiom means that you believe it, you know it.
And Kay's good.
Well, one thing I remember him saying today, I think even, or yesterday, that by doing this Zazzle and getting things out there, that you are actually sending Baraka to people that, you know, people.
Mm-hmm.
And that this is an amazing way to actually send out the Baraka. That's what I heard him say,
mm-hmm.
just in addition.
Thank you. Yeah, well, I mean, I think, I don't know, if Pat could speak to this, I think that it's in line, it's a extension or continuation of this, the practices that Erie was talking about, these practices in the late 80s or early 90s, right?
Yeah.
When this book was put together, it's exactly what he was talking about, is this a form of direct transmission. Anyway, we could obviously continue in this
vein.
Well,
that is good to know, isn't it? That's good to know that.
Well,
did you guys on the phone have any more Silverdale or yes?
Not for me.
Bernie LaPlante.
Well, Bernie just says dilution, and I think he's referring to the story of the soup of the soup.
Soup of the duck. Eventually the duck.
Or the
something.
Stone. Yes,
okay.
Dilution.
Well,
Dad, I have some more comments. Yeah, I think that's
please. Well, thank you. That was, you have one more or you have no more?
I have no more.
Oh!
Oh, we were waiting for your one more comment. Okay, all right.
My last hazardous proclamation.
Okay. On that note, I think we're running a little over time, and we're going to bring this
up,
hour to
up,
a close, maybe.
Dan?
Okay, well, Grocky has a comment.
Please.
Given what Lara just said, then in a way it all becomes objective prayer.
Thank you.
Thank you. Very nice. Good. Yes. That's a good summary.
That's a good place. Thank you, Grocky.
A good conclusion. So thank you all for attending, and we'll be back same time, same place in a week, more or less. I mean, somehow. Maybe that's an illusion, but
that's what we generally
say. It's
going to
look much like this. David Franco should be back, and we're going to, I hope with David, we'll launch into this Chapter 54 called Notes on Some Exercises, which is...
Yes.
Those are some exercises.
Wow.
Okay. Thank you all. Good night.
And Dan?
Okay. We'll talk about it later.
We can still talk about hospitality even next week.
Even next week.
So thank you all. Good night. Thank you all for coming.
Good night.
Good night. David. Thank you. Good night, Dan. Okay. I mean,
bye,
can
you
I
guys.
Do it again?
Good night.
Yes.
Oh, and
good night.
Can I close?
Close it for saving the recording.
Star 9 again? Oh, boy.
Oh.
I don't know.
The closing
she doesn't have here.